Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
Hi, my name is Abby, and I'm an alcoholic.
Abby!
My sobriety date is October 19th of 2007, and my home group is a sponsorship group. We do meet every Saturday night, 8:30 in Chatham, New Jersey. If you're ever in the area, you should come check us out. It's pretty much the best meeting in the world. I'm a little biased, though. I love my home group. A whole bunch of them came out to see me speak tonight. I haven't been around AA all that long, but I've never seen a home group quite like mine. You know, we do everything together. We know each other way too well. I don't know. They just kind of drop everything just to help another alcoholic. You know, there's a group of people who are willing to lay down their lives for another alcoholic, and I'm forever grateful. And they offer me words of encouragement like, don't embarrass the home group. And where should we sit so we could heckle you? But it's really great. Thanks, Jeff, for asking me to speak. I didn't see him. Is he here? Oh, okay. Well, thanks, Jeff, wherever you are. It's an honor to do anything for Alcoholics Anonymous. I kind of look like crap, actually, tonight. I normally wouldn't wear this to an AA meeting, but, I mean, to be quite honest, I kind of just dropped the ball on my attire, so I apologize. I hope that whatever comes out of my mouth is all right. But anyway, I guess I'm here to tell you a little bit about what it was like, what happened, and what I'm like today. You know, I'll try not to share my opinions because I got a lot of them. But, you know, I grew up, you know, honestly, my memories from my childhood, it was good. You know what I mean? Like, I did not have a traumatic childhood. I can't, I definitely, my dad drinks a little funny, you know. When I started drinking, other people were stealing liquor out of their parents' liquor cabinet. I was stealing it out of, you know, under the bathroom sink or out of the closet. And it worked out great for the both of us because you're not going to be like, oh, did you take my vodka from my closet? You know? So it worked out really well for me. And, you know, I always have a picture of him in my mind of him on an exercise bike drinking a glass of scotch in the place where the water bottle's supposed to be. You know? But I can definitely tell you I was never beat as a kid. I was never molested as a kid, you know. My memories of my dad as a kid is he'd take us out on weekends and we'd go biking and hiking and, you know. I was always so resentful of my dad, and now I was like, wow, he could do all those things, but the fact that he's so spiritually sick, it's like, wow, I would never be able to accomplish that while I was still drinking. You know, I need the people and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous to be able to function in any sort of way, you know. And, I don't know, I always, you know, I've been thinking a lot about it lately. I always, you know, I hear the people in the room say, you know, I felt different, I felt like an outsider, I felt like I was the outside looking in. And really, like, what I felt is I always wanted to be someone other than myself, you know. I remember in second grade I got glasses, you know, and I was so excited because I thought, like, no one would recognize me. Like, once I put the glasses on, I thought it'd be like Superman and Clark Kent. You know, I walked into the room and I'm like, no one's going to know it's me, you know. And, like, duh, everyone recognized me. There's just glasses, you know. And then in seventh grade I got contacts. You know, I had to do, like, a makeover. And everyone called me Abigail up to then. And then seventh grade I became Abby, you know. And it's like I got a whole new persona, you know, and I don't know, I always wanted someone else's family. You know, I thought my family was too screwed up, and I always wanted someone else's friends. You know, I had a lot of friends, but they just weren't the right kind of friends. You know, I always wanted someone else's car, someone else's clothes, someone else's, you know, I just wanted to be someone other than me, because being me sucks, you know. And like I said, it was not the outside thing. I had every opportunity in the world. You know, my parents provided everything that I could have wanted and needed, you know. I think my life was going pretty good until about the age of 8 or 9. You know, things are going downhill from there. I was just a sad little girl, you know, and at the time looking back, I see that was probably, you know, my alcoholism. You know, I didn't know that at the time. I was very morbid. I was, like, really obsessed with death. I always talked about, I don't know, it was weird, you know. I went from this being really happy, perky girl to being, like, sad and introverted, you know. I became unbearably self-aware of where my hands were when I was talking to people, things that were coming out of my mouth, things that I was saying, what you guys would think about me. It's a lot. It's a lot of pressure for a 9-year-old, you know. And it didn't get any better. You know, I go to middle school, and, oh, wow. I had glasses, and I had braces. You know, I got contacts, so it cleaned up a little bit. And I mean, I was so disillusioned. I was so, like, far out there, you know. I used to, like, wear purple leopard print pants, you know. Like, I tried to wear makeup, and I'm sure it looked awful and hideous. In eighth grade, I started tweezing my eyebrows, and I didn't know when to stop. So for about a year, I had no eyebrows, you know. And, like, I'm really pale, so it just all, like, kind of blended in my skin. It looked horrible. And I thought I looked really good, you know. And, I don't know. By the time I was about 13, 14, 15 years old, I was feeling a little suicidal, you know, to be completely honest, you know. I didn't get it. I didn't get the point of living. I was like, okay, you go to school, you go to work, you get a job, you get a family, all that crap, and then you die. You know, I was like, let me just skip right to the death part, you know. And I became very apathetic towards life. I didn't want to try in school anymore. I didn't want to. Yeah, I was like the kid with a lot of potential, you know. I heard speakers talk about that. Like, I had a lot of potential. I was a very bright girl. And I was like, well, you all knew I was so bright, so why do I have to, like, prove it? You know, why do I have to, you know, excel in school if you guys already know how smart I am, you know? So I kind of gave up on that. And life was just going downhill, you know. And I was just dark. I was depressed. And I had no idea why. I really had no idea why. You know, I thought it was everything else. I thought it was my parents. I thought it was my school. I thought it was my sister. I thought I was gay for a really long time. You know, I thought it was all these different things, you know? And so, like, I think that middle school is maybe the problem. And so for high school, I went to a completely new school. I started going to private school, and I didn't know anybody. I didn't know, I started over fresh. And I get there, and I think, oh, everything's going to be different. Everything's going to be different. Everything's just the same, you know. I'm still scared. I'm still awkward. I'm shy, you know. I don't know how to talk to people, you know. I don't know what to say to them. It's like I tried so hard to impress people, and I think they could see right through that, you know. So I remember I went on this, like, it was like a really risky private school. Everyone's, like, had a lot of money and stuff. So I went on the freshman retreat, you know, where everyone gets to go know each other. And I flipped out on the freshman retreat. Flipped out. I called up my mom. I was crying. You know, and I had this poor girl as a roommate. And she's like, I don't know what to do, you know. And I just, you know, that's just how I was. You know, I just couldn't deal with people. I couldn't face life. And I just wanted to hide in my room, you know. And so I get there, and I think everything's going to be different and everything's the same, you know. And that's pretty, and I wanted to be one of those, I used to watch those, like, teen movies from the 90s, like Bring It On, and like I always thought that because Steve was watching that today, and like Clueless and all those other movies, and I was like, okay, that's who I gotta be. I gotta be like the cheerleader. I gotta be the prom queen. I gotta have the hot boyfriend, you know. And like, you know, I get that we don't even have cheerleaders at my school. You know, I did not go to my prom. You know, I was busy doing other things by that time. And you know, it was nothing like I thought it would be. And I got there, and I made a lot of friends. I did, but they weren't the right kind of friends. They weren't the pretty girls. There was this one girl, her name was Pitty. And yeah, that's her name. And somehow she was the most popular and hottest girl in school. You know, even with an unfortunate name like Pitty. And I wanted to be like her. She was tan. She was beautiful. And I just thought she always knew the right things to say. You know, I was like, she was like, you know, she drove a Mercedes, and she was just fabulous, and she always had a hot boyfriend, and I was like, that's what I wanted to be, you know. I never cared about school. I always cared about my social life, you know, because I was like, that's going to fix me, you know, because maybe if people like me, I will like me, you know, but it's hard for anybody to like you when you hate yourself, you know. I had my first drink when I was about 15. I went to this, wow, I went to this party, and I wasn't exactly invited, but I went anyway, and I go, and I get all dressed up, and I have a little skirt on, and I have, put on my makeup and everything, and I think I look fabulous, and I get there, and I'm scared, you know, and I like to talk a big game. You know, I was such a liar. Oh, my God, I lied about everything. You know, I used to make up boyfriends, you know, like, I had one, I was like, oh, he goes to a different school, he's not in the yearbook, he was there on picture day, you know, and like, so I get there and I lie, and I'm like, oh, I party all the time, you know, I know all the tricks, you know, like, I drink every weekend, really, like, what I did every weekend was I smoked pot by myself and watched, like, the Learning Channel, you know, I wasn't going out and I wasn't partying, you know, but I wanted everyone to think I was. So I get there, and, you know, I had no idea what was going to happen when I started drinking. I was scared to start drinking, to be honest. In health class, we wear these, like, beer goggles. Like, literally, they simulated what it was like when you're really drunk. And I was like, whoa. Like, I mean, it was like the room was spinning. And I was like, this doesn't seem like much fun, you know. I don't want to do that. I didn't want to be, like, out of control, you know. I was really scared. But you know what? I started drinking because I wanted to be cool. I wanted to fit in. You know, that was it. You know, it sounds so cliche, you know, but that's all I ever wanted to be. You know, I just wanted to be part of. You know, I wanted to be comfortable in my own skin because I never was. And so I started drinking, and next thing I know, I'm puking. You know, I'm blacking out. I'm passing out. You know, I puked in the toilet a little bit, and then this girl, she's one of the pretty girls at school, and she hands me some bread to calm my stomach, and she gets right back on her shoes, you know, and, you know, I was, like, crawling all over the ground because my legs didn't seem to work anymore, which wasn't so good because I was wearing a skirt, you know, and, like, you know, I was just a hot mess, you know, and I just made a complete ass out of myself, you know, in front of all the cool people at school. You know, I'm trying to impress everybody. And I woke up the next morning, and my friend's older sister was lecturing me about how 15-year-olds shouldn't be drinking this much, you know. And I was like, bitch, you have no idea, you know. Like, if you felt the way that I felt, you would need to drink like I had to, you know. And I was like, I thought it made me cool. You know, to be throwing up and all that and, you know, getting so wasted. I thought that was my badge of honor, you know. And, you know, I didn't remember all the embarrassment. I didn't remember how awful I felt. I didn't remember how the room was spinning and, it was making me nauseous. All I remembered was that feeling that I got from alcohol, you know. Alcohol was the one thing that made me okay, you know. It made me fit in my own skin, you know. It made me okay to be me because it was never okay to be me. Like I said before, I always want to be somebody else, you know, and for me, what it's like when I start drinking, I have a couple drinks, and I feel a little more at ease, you know, I feel good, I can maybe talk to people, I can have a conversation, maybe a few more drinks, I'm like working the crowd, you know, I'm talking to people, and, you know, a few more drinks, I'm like the hottest girl in the room, and you're just lucky to be in my presence, you know, and for a shy, awkward girl like me, it was like magic. You know, it's a magic solution to all my problems. When I drink, I don't have to think. You know, when I drink, I don't have to worry about my family. I don't have to worry about my friends. I just, you know, I can talk, and whatever comes out, I think sounds really profound and wonderful and awesome, you know, and I can sing and I can dance. I can do everything fabulous. I can drive. You know, I can do everything really well. And, you know, I chase that as much as possible. You know, looking back, I did not see it like that at the time. You know, this is like all in perspective. You know, I didn't see how alcohol dramatically affected my life from the very first time I got drunk. You know, I ditched all my friends that didn't drink because suddenly they weren't cool enough for me anymore. You know, and I found the bad kids, and I liked the bad kids. You know, and I wanted to be a badass. I wanted to be like them. You know, they were the kids that are getting arrested and going to rehab, and I'm thinking, I don't want to go to college. I want to go to jail. Like, this is awesome, you know? That's what I aspire to be. The one time, I never got arrested, but the one time I got the plastic handcuffs put on me, I had the officer only cut off one side of it, and I had them keep the other side because I was so proud of it, you know, which is a terrible idea. It's really hard to get off, but, and I don't know. And I'm not, like, I'm a wimp, you know, I can't commit a crime to save my life, you know, and I finally, but I felt like I belonged, because these people drank the way that I drank, you know, and that's all that really mattered to me, and, like, I was not someone who was very outgoing, especially with people of the opposite sex, like, they were just completely aliens to me, I had no idea what to say, and I had no idea, and when I drank, I could talk to boys. You know, I was very friendly, and I did the things that, you know, female alcoholics do, you know, and I drank for 4 years. My alcoholism progressed really quick, you know, that's all I can really say about that, you know. My alcoholism brought me to a place where it didn't work anymore really quick. You know, I first thought it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. You know, I went to a lot of parties, I had a lot of friends. You know, I was going out every weekend. I was lying to my parents. Within a few months of my drinking, I had done, like, ballet for 10 years. Within a few months of my drinking, I threw that out the window, you know. I started cutting school, and I'm so manipulative. So manipulative. I made everyone feel sorry for me. Somehow, I was screwing everybody else over, and somehow I made them feel bad for me, you know. I don't know how that happened. Like, my senior year, my house almost burned down. And when your house almost burns down, people feel really bad for you, you know. And I used that, you know. I ran with that. I was able to leave school whenever I wanted to. I would show up high. I would show up drunk, you know, whatever. You know, by the time I'm 17 years old, I'm chugging vodka on my way to school, drinking in rush hour. Like, you know, it's like that's what I needed to do, you know. Because when I was sober, I felt like I was drowning. When I was sober, I needed to cut my wrist to make myself feel okay, you know. When I was sober, I just wanted to hide in my room. I wanted to die on a daily basis, you know, and I thought there were so many things wrong with me. When I was 16, I begged my parents to let me see a psychiatrist, you know, and because I thought I had so many different problems, you know, because, like, I had no idea what the hell was wrong with me. I had no idea why I felt this way. And, you know, I told them, you know, the truth as best as I know how to do, which isn't very well. And, he prescribed me all sorts. He got me a pill for every color of the freaking rainbow, you know? Like, I was on everything. And let me tell you, those pills worked for a little while. You know, I was doing really well in school for 4 months, you know, and I was, you know, I felt really good and everything. And the problem with me is I don't really know how to take things as prescribed. That really means nothing to me. You know, what feels good, if it feels good, I want more, you know? And, That got me a lot of trouble, too, you know, and, I was just a complete disaster. I really was, and I really thought it was everybody else's fault. I never looked at my drinking and said, oh, maybe it's my drinking, you know, because honestly, the people that I hung out with, they drank like me, you know, so there's no reason to ever question it. So, somehow I graduated high school. I wasn't allowed to go to the graduation, but they were just so tired of me. That's I somehow made it into college. I have no idea how that happened either. And I decided, you know, I was using a lot of other substances at that time, and I decided that those substances were my problem. Yep. And let me tell you, it's really easy to stop smoking crack when you drink all the time. And so I drank all the time. You know, I drank from when I started college. There's nobody watching me. You know, it's a lot easier to get alcohol. And I could drink pretty much around the clock, you know, and I held it together for, like, a semester. I was only taking 3 classes, so it wasn't that hard. A few things started happening. I got in trouble at school, and they made me see a substance abuse counselor, and she questioned my drinking, you know. And for some reason, I was so honest with this woman. I have no idea why. You know, I can only tell you it was God working my life. I don't know if I was trying to impress her. Like, this is all the drugs that I've done, and this is how much I drank. Like, that somehow made me cool. You know, and she was horrified. You know, she was not an alcoholic, okay? She would tell me things like, why don't you try to stick to beer? I think that hard alcohol is your problem. You know, you seem to have a lot of problems taking shots. And I was like, okay. And I tried to do it. But once I quit that first drink in me, all bets are off. You know, I have what the big book talks about. I have that allergy of the body, and I have that obsession of the mind. Okay. Sorry about that. That allergy of the body. So when I put a drink in me, it craves another drink. I don't drink like normal people. normal people sometimes will get a little wasted, they'll party or whatever. But when things happen, like they need to, you know, do things like go to work in the morning or, you know, drive or something like that, you know, they can have one or two. I can't. I just can't. I remember being at Thanksgiving dinner and we were all drinking wine around the table and everything, and for some reason I had a couple glasses and everyone stopped drinking and I needed to go sneak off into the basement and take tequila shots by myself. You know, I had no idea at that time. I thought it was a choice. You know, I had no idea that my body was making the choices for me. You know, when I started drinking, all bets were off and I had no idea what was going to happen. You know, and so when the substance abuse counselor tried telling me to slow down, you know, try taking smoke breaks in between my drinks and all that stuff. Like, that doesn't work for someone like me. You know, and another thing that happened was I started hanging around these people. They're called social drinkers. And we drank every night together, but somehow I ended up blacking out every single night. And I ended up doing something stupid, and I ended up naked somewhere, and wandering home and not knowing how I got there and falling down steps and, you know, getting bruises all over. One of the people in my home group talked about, he like always woke up with bruises all over him, and it was definitely not from getting in fights, it was just from me falling everywhere, you know. And and they started questioning my drinking, you know. And so I definitely can say that counselor helped save my life, though, because she planted the seed, you know. She was the first person to question my drinking, you know. And then I in December of that year, you know, I went out and I had a few drinks and I blacked out, and I came to and I was being brutally raped, you know, and I didn't stop drinking, you know. I just stopped going out, you know. I decided that other people were my problem. They were conscious of my drinking. I was having those kind of consequences women alcoholics have. And so I just drank in my room all the time, you know. I had a mini fridge by my bed. And I used it as my nightstand. And I wouldn't even have to get out of bed. I just had handles of Bacardi 151 and handles of vodka in there, and I would be able to drink all day. You know, and I wouldn't get up to do things like go to the bathroom or piss the bed, you know. This one time my roommate came in, and I had, like, peed the bed, and I didn't want to say anything about it. So I go downstairs, and I went to, like, I think I was still drunk, and in the middle of it, I start sobering up, and I was like, I can't deal with it, so I just threw my sheets away. You know, it was just retarded because I didn't have any sheets then on my bed. You know, it was like really an alcoholic thinking. And I was miserable, you know, and I was absolutely miserable. And I had a drink around the clock just to be okay. You know, drinking stopped being fun. It stopped being, there was a point in my drinking, I couldn't tell you exactly when it happened, but I started drinking with a sense of urgency. You know, like I needed to get it in as fast as possible, as much as possible. You know, I didn't really care what was going to happen. I didn't care who I hung out with. You know, I hung out with a lot of shady people, you know, and I just really didn't care. I went to my first AA meeting, and I thought, and I went, I'm not really sure why I went. I went because I started questioning my own drinking, you know, and I was so miserable, and I was so alone, you know. And I go to this meeting, and I talk to this guy, and he's 25 years sober. I'm thinking, that's a little extreme. You know? Why the hell would you want to stay sober 25 years? You know, I went to Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know that they wanted you to stop drinking altogether. I thought they'd be like that counselor and give me some tips on how to control and enjoy my drinking. So I went home after that meeting, and we read Working With Others, kind of a big book, and they gave me a big book, and, you know, we sat in a circle, and we prayed after the meeting. Get me the hell out of here, you know. And I went home and I got drunk and I said AA didn't work for me, you know. And I continued to drink for a few more months after that. And by then I'm convinced I'm an alcoholic, and that's all I can ever talk about. I would go to occasionally I would go to parties and I would talk about, oh, I'm an alcoholic. I'm like, that's great, Abby. Fabulous for you, you know. And I remember going to this one guy who's like a 6'4" black man, and I was like, I'm an alcoholic, and he's like, I'm an alcoholic too, you know. And it's like, it's just like a beautiful moment, you know. By that time, like, I didn't have a whole lot of friends I was hanging out with. My one of my favorite speakers, Chris F., talks about there was a point in his drinking where he didn't have any friends with real names. there was like a point in my drinking, I had no friends with real names. They were like Little E or like Ruth or like, you know, they had, you know, I didn't know anybody's real name, you know. And I thought these were my buddies, you know. They're like my best friends. Like, where are they now, you know? And what ends up happening is I get to the point, not where my life, I mean, things are falling around, you know, a little bit falling apart around me. I had a boyfriend. He broke up with me after 3 weeks. Because that's how unbearable I was, you know. That's how unbearable I was to be around. And I had a job at a liquor store that lasted 2 weeks. It was October, and I hadn't, school, the semester started in September, and I hadn't been to a single class. I kept saying, I'll go next week, you know. And, but really what got me into the rooms was the feelings on the inside, you know. The feelings of shame, the feelings the remorse, you know, I had really degraded myself, you know, I did do anything to get the things that I needed, I would do anything to get alcohol, you know, and I didn't care, because if I did something that I felt shame for, I could just drink the pain away, you know, I didn't have to deal with it, you know, and the booze stopped working, that's it, you know, the booze stopped working. This didn't make me feel better anymore. It didn't give me relief. It didn't make me feel okay. It didn't give me that feeling of comfort in my own skin. You know, I would sit on the floor of my apartment and I'd rock back and forth, drinking, wishing I had a gun to put my head. You know, wishing I had, praying for the courage to kill myself. You know, and I knew I couldn't control my drinking anymore. You know, and I didn't know. I didn't know what was wrong with me. You know, I could put down all the other drugs, you know, with ease. I couldn't put down drinking. I just couldn't stop drinking. You know, and I got to the point where I was desperate enough to ask for some help. I went to my psych counselor, and she told me to go to the, she told me I could take off some time from school, and I was like, okay, you know, and they sent me to this outpatient rehab thing, and the rehab told me to go to AA. So I went to AA, and I had no idea what was going on. I went there, and I got all dressed up for the meetings, and I put on makeup, and I acted like I knew everything. And it's like, if you're new and you think we don't know, we all know you don't know anything, you know? It's like, you're not fooling anyone. And I was trying to, and then let me tell you, the first couple of weeks, they were easy. They were easy for me. You know, I got all this booze out of me, and I was like, I feel great. You know, this sobriety, this is easy. You know, I can do this. You know? And I didn't come here because I wanted to stay sober forever, you know, or because I wanted a whole brand new life. You know, I came here because I had nowhere else to go. You know, all the pills didn't work, the therapy didn't work, my parents couldn't help me, my friends couldn't help me. Nobody understood the pain that I felt inside. That's how I felt, you know. Nobody understood. Nobody could understand. And I got AA, and I came into AA the worst way possible. I had a lot of stuff going on. I had this boyfriend, he broke up with me, and then he just didn't go away, you know, and I had friends who were still calling me, you know, I was still going out to parties and stuff, you know, just not drinking. I was, my boyfriend used to drink around me, and I was okay with that, because, like, he would tell me he loved me and how much he wanted to marry me. I was like, I felt so special, you know, and, you know, and we didn't like each other at all, you know, but God forbid I'd be alone, you know, God forbid, you know, I need other people in my life to tell me how fabulous I am, how wonderful I am, you know, to make me feel okay. And, you know, about 30 days sober, I got the sponsor, and she came up to me in a meeting, and she asked me if I had a sponsor. I said no, and she offered to be my sponsor, and what I heard was, I want to be your friend, you know, so I'm like, okay, you know, you can sponsor me. I was so excited, I was so pumped. I was like, I went to IOP, and I'm like, I got a sponsor, you know, and I called her the next day, and she took me through the first two steps, you know, we went on a 12-step call. And I love it. I'm like 30 days sober, and I loved it. There's like this drunk woman in the back, you know. So I was like the one with time, you know. It was fantastic. And she was like, I just want to be like you guys. Like I want to know how do you do it? And I'm like thinking, I'm shit. Like, I got 30 days, you know. And I felt like we were the A brigade. We were going to save the drunks, you know. I was like, this is so cool, you know. And we went through the first two steps. I don't remember going, apparently we did that. I think she tricked me. I have no idea. I don't remember doing it at all. You know, I think she tricked me into doing the first 2 steps. And, you know, I didn't call her for a little while after that. She told me to read page 60-63 in the big book, you know, do my 3rd step. And we didn't do my 3rd step for a little while after that, I don't think. It's really hard for me to remember. It wasn't all that long ago, but it's hard to remember. But we didn't do that because I never called her, you know. I never showed an ounce of willingness. You know, I had all these other distractions in my life. You know, I had 1 foot in, kind of in AA, you know, and like a lot more out of AA, you know. I wanted to live my life but not drink. You know, that's what I wanted. And I had a lot of ideas. I was like, I need to go to school, I need to get a job, I need to do this, this, and this, I need to take these light pills, I need to do that. And then I was like, I had no idea how to live sober. No idea. Because drinking is not my problem. It's never been my problem. It's always been my solution. You know, and I had no idea. I had no idea. You know, she went, eventually I got a little bit more willing. I don't know exactly what happened. But I ended up doing a 4th and 5th step. And I didn't really see it at the time, but my life completely changed when I did that 5th step. You know, for a few reasons. I started feeling like I was a part of something. You know, because what this woman did for me is she laid down her armor. You know, within the first, like, few minutes of talking to her, you know, that day we went through the 1st step, you know, she had told me she'd been raped, she told me she'd been molested. You know, I was like, I can tell this woman anything. You know, she completely let down her guard and showed me who she was and showed me all the thickest things about her. So that I made it okay to show the thickest things about me. You know, and I really felt like I was the worst person in the world when I came into AA. And I felt that nobody understood. Nobody could understand how I felt. And, you know, I started feeling for the first time in my life that there are other people that are like me. There are other people that have done the same thing to me. And let me tell you, I've not said anything in Alcoholics Anonymous that has shocked anyone. You know? We've all done the same thing. There's about 2 million people in the fellowship who drank exactly the same way I drank. You know, and if you drank like me, you're probably one of us, you know, whether you like it or not. And I thought I was so different my whole life, you know. And I did this 5th step, and the other thing that changed is from that point on, I had no excuse. I'm not a victim anymore. And my sponsor did not spare my feelings, pointing out my part. No, not at all. She has some very choice words for me. And I was thinking this one was a bitch, you know. Because immediately someone starts attacking me, I start taking their inventory. I like, she doesn't know what she's talking about. She wasn't there. She doesn't know, you know. And I like singing my part today, sometimes, not all the time. Because when I'm pissed off at people, like, it just hurts so bad. Because for me, I just build a resentment that just keeps building and building and building, you know. And when I can see my part, it's like, oh, okay, it's not so bad, you know. And, at first it was kind of hard to take because no one really had told. One time my friend told me I was a drama queen, and I got so mad at her, I didn't talk to her for a week. And, you know, looking back, I'm a drama queen. You know, it was not like she was trying to be mean, you know. It's just telling me the truth. And, you know, I just don't have any excuses anymore. You know, I've heard a lot of people say victims do not stay sober, you know? And, you know, that right that night I did 6 and 7. I probably, for my 5th step hour, I probably thought for about 10 minutes. You know, I could not keep my mind still for 2 seconds. And, you know, I started writing out my men's cards, and I started making amends. I was about 90 days sober, and I started making my amends. And the ILP, everyone saw me, whoa, you're doing it way too fast. You know, you need to slow down. My counselor, she had about 30 years sober, and she told me only do 4 steps a year. Which made no sense to me. Like, you do a 4th step and then you just wait. I don't know, you know. But I knew it was the right thing for me to do. You know, I have no idea what anybody else should do, but I knew that was the right thing for me. Because by 90 days sober, I was on fire. You know, I was so excited about being sober. I was so excited about living life, you know. In the beginning, you know, people used to invite me out to, like, the diner, to movies, and I'm thinking, why would I want to hang out with you losers, you know? And then I became one of those losers, you know? I started talking about God, I started talking about helping people, and I got really excited about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know? I started, like, believing in God and praying because everybody else was doing it, you know? It was just like drinking. I was like, everyone else, I might as well do it, you know? I don't want them to think I'm weird or something, you know? And so I started praying, I started... You know, I got a big God in my life today, a huge God, you know? And when my problems are too big, my God just isn't big enough, you know, and I know my God's got my back today. I don't know. I had a third step moment like a couple weeks ago. I was looking for a part-time job, and I was filling out applications and things. And this is what I need to do. I need to get a job. And this is blah blah blah. And I kind of put it on the back burner for a little while, and I threw myself into AA and helping others because it's gone a little bit crazy. There's a lot of stuff going on in my life, and it's gone a little bit crazy. And so I started going out of my way to help other people, and I started shelling out what little money I had to buy people dinner at the diner, and, you know, I started trying to sponsor girls and start people on my steps, and someone came up to me and they said, are you still looking for a job? You know, and I was like, yeah, you know, and they hired me right on the spot, you know, and then the woman calls me a couple days later, she said, and I'm looking for, I have a daughter who I watch during the day, she's right over there, and I can't work during the day, you know, I only want to work a couple nights a week. So this woman, the manager called me a few days later and she said, I'm only going to be able to give you 2 nights a week. You know, we got other people, you know, who want more hours and been there longer. And I'm like, that is exactly what I want. I was like, I only want 2 days a week. You know, so that's how I see, you know, God is working my life. God's got my back. You know, as long as I'm trying to help other kids, his other kids, God's got my back. You know, I have nothing to worry about today. And it's hard for me to put that much trust into something that I don't understand. Because I don't know what God is. You know, I don't claim to know what God is, you know, but I can, moments like that give me faith that there's something out there. And I started making these amends, and let me tell you, like, going through the steps the first time, I love that. And I started trying to sponsor girls in my IOP, and they were telling me you can only have a year to sponsor people, and I was like, come over here, I'm going to try to sponsor you, and they're like, whoa, you know, you got to back off a little bit. And I was just trying to help people because I felt so good. You know, it was like drinking. You know, when I first started drinking, I wanted everyone else to drink too. So I loved it. It felt so good. That's why I was just a step. You know, I wanted to go save all the drunks because, you know, I felt so good. I wanted everyone else to feel that good. You know, and my son did, you know, did it through 10, 11, and 12. You know, I mean, she's had me praying since it was the first time she met me. You know, getting down on my knees every morning and every night. You know, and just praying throughout the day, keeping that conscious contact. And, you know, 10 steps are something I just need to do right when I get a resentment. Because sometimes I'll try to wait and call my sponsor. I'm like, it's not that bad. You know? And I have to do 10 steps right away. Because what I do is I build a case against people. You know? and it gets worse and worse. And the more time I spend on myself in my own head, it's like they start doing more bad things to me, you know, somehow. You know? And they just become a complete asshole. And, so I learned, and I really act out a lot on those resentments. I had this period, you know, a few months ago. My daughter's about 5 months old, and the first few months of her life, I was just a complete nutcase. Well, actually, my entire first year of sobriety, I was a nutcase, because I was pregnant for most of it. And it was definitely not the easier, softer way. I mean, what happened was I went from one boyfriend right to another, you know, and a few months later, then yada, 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 you know, I had a baby. You know, this is not my sponsor's direction, you know. Self will run riot, let me tell you. I was miserable. I had so much fight in me. You know, I thought everything my sponsor told me. You know, I remember one time I was so mad at her. I don't even remember what she did. I started, you know, she handed me a speaker CD to listen to, and I drove away and I just threw it out the window, you know. there were times. She'd be like, I'm not gonna talk to you unless you do this. And I was like, okay. And I'd hang up on her. You know, I was like the world's worst sponsor ever. And I thought it was like her fault. You know. Yeah. And I don't even know where I was going. Where was I going with this? Let me tell you. When I got that first step down, when I'm able to surrender completely, admit that not just I'm an alcoholic, not just that my life is unmanageable, but that I'm done managing. You know, and that I'm just done, you know, and I can follow direction, take someone else's way. My life is a lot easier. And let me tell you, my life is a lot easier when I'm not fighting, you know, and when I say okay, even if I don't agree with my sponsor, because I don't all the time, and even if I don't, if I don't want to do it, I just do it anyway. Yeah. My sponsor, I ended up switching sponsors. My sponsor lives in Florida now, so I feel like I am. But, I mean, it really, like, I when I first started, I wanted her to like me so much, I'd do anything she told me to do, you know. I wanted her to think I was, like, Mrs. AA, and that, you know, I'm like the president at AA or something, and I do everything right in sobriety. And my sponsor is friends with a lot of people in my home group, so I get afraid that she'll find out if I don't if I don't do it, like, you know, if there's something I'm not telling her, I'm like, oh, I better get to her first. You know? I get a lie, right? And let me tell you, I mean, I picked a sponsor, and I didn't pick someone local because there was nobody local around me that I had what I wanted. You know, my sponsor glowed. That woman shines God out of her. And it's because she helped so many people, you know? And I love her. I came back from Florida visiting her, and a bunch of people from my home group went down, too. She celebrated 7 years sober. And it was fabulous because my sponsor, she lives in Florida, so I get a Florida vacation when I go down and visit her, you know? And I get a tan and whatever. This is tan for me. And, she was fabulous. She was tight. She's like, I don't set an alarm. You know, I just ask God to get me up when I need to be up. So I'm like, that is just fabulous. You know, that is just God reliance. You know, it's like those little things. I'm like, wow, you know, I love that, you know? And, I don't know, a lot of things have happened in my life, you know? I'm not going to, like, get up here and, you know, obviously, like sobriety isn't, it's not like I'm walking in sunshine 24/7. Shit happens, you know? Like I was saying before, when I did things in when I was drinking, I didn't have to deal with the pain. You know, when I sobered up, I had to deal with it. You know, I absolutely had to deal with those things. And let me tell you, on my fourth step, I didn't remember everything because I had stuffed it so deep down inside me. You know, and when I was pregnant, there was so much stuff coming up. You know, I remembered this boyfriend, the first boyfriend I ever had, he was a really abusive relationship. He was sexually abusive, verbally abusive. And, you know, my sponsor had me look down and look at my part in it. Like, maybe you shouldn't date people that you know have been arrested for rape before, you know? You know, maybe you shouldn't hang around people just because they have, you know, drugs and alcohol. And let me tell you, you know, I hang around people that I love and that I trust today, and I don't worry about those things anymore. You know, I don't worry about the things that I had to worry about when I was drinking, you know? And that just proves to me that I have a part, that I showed up and participated in everything in my life, you know? And it's just not always easy being in sobriety, but let me tell you, I am able to live the most amazing life today. When it's good, it's really friggin' good. You know, after I went to the talk, my sponsor said I could start sponsoring other people, and I was really excited at first. I was like, yay, I'm going to save the drunks, whatever. I thought I was going to be a fabulous sponsor. They kept telling me you're going to need to make mistakes in sponsorship. You're going to, you need to learn and grow. You're going to need to ask for a lot of advice and help. You know, and I'm thinking, I got this. You know? Like, I have, like, 90 days sober, you know? Watch out. And, of course, the first girl I tried to sponsor, she stuck around for 3 days and never called me again. You know, the next girl, she stuck around for a few months. And I remember calling up my sponsor one day, and I said, Amy, I was like, I get it. I get what everyone's talking about. I feel that buzz. You know? I felt so good. You know, I felt the first time that I was actually contributing to something. You know, I felt like I was contributing to Alcoholics Anonymous instead of just sucking the recovery out of everybody else, you know? So the first time I was calling out my sponsor, and that was my problem, was this other girl's problem, you know? And she had a lot of them, you know? She was a mess. I loved it. I loved it so much, but I am so selfish, you know? And I started putting other things in my life before Alcoholics Anonymous. I started putting my relationship before Alcoholics Anonymous. I started putting family before Alcoholics Anonymous. So miserable. So miserable. You know, my relationship was falling apart because I was throwing fights all the time and because I was doing a lot of crazy things, going through his emails and all that sort of things. And there was some smashing of things involved. Not my proudest moments, you know. But, I mean, eventually what happened was I got desperate enough to ask for some help. And what happened is I finally surrendered. You know, I finally decided to put Alcoholics Anonymous first. Before my relationship, any relationship in my life, before my daughter's life, you know, because if I'm not sober, I can't be a mother, you know, I won't have that ability to show up and be a mom today, you know, and, you know, when I'm going out and I'm helping people, like I was saying before, when I'm going out and I'm putting AA first and going out and helping people the best that I can, you know, God just takes care of things and things just work out, you know. We had this huge, you know, stack of, and when I just asked for help, we had this huge stack, and my daughter was in the hospital for like a couple weeks, and, you know, insurance covered most of it, but we still had a huge stack of, like, deductibles and all those payments and stuff, but it was so overwhelming, and it was like a couple $1,000s of all this stuff, and I was like, okay, well, I can't handle this, you know, why don't I ask for some help, you know, and I asked for a loan from my parents, and they gave it to me, go figure, you know, I asked for some help, and someone gives it to me, you know, I mean, I don't have all the answers, you know, and Chuck C. talks about it, like, ego is our biggest problem, you know, I have a huge ego, even when I feel like shit about myself, when I feel like the scum of the earth, I still think I know better than you, you know? I'm like, okay, it sucks right now, but I got it from here, you know, and, let me tell you, when I can put my ego aside, you know, and ask for a little bit of help, you know, my life is that much better. And when I actually take someone's advice and follow the direction, you know, my life just gets that much better and that much easier. I have the best, I think, craziest home group in the whole world. You know, I really do. I love them to death, and I hated them for so long. I did. I hated. I was sitting there, I was like, well, bull crap. They're not really this happy, you know. They don't mean it. They don't have God in their life, you know. And I don't know who I am. We plan to talk about it, how, like, if you look around in the room and everyone else is a jerk, you know, there's probably something going on with you. And that was like me. You know, I'm taking everybody else's inventory. I'm, like, looking at everybody else's conduct, everybody else. I'm, like, not looking at how freaking selfish that I'm actually being, you know. And I just started really loving my home group recently. You know, we like I said, we do everything together. We hang out all the time. We're like crazy with the commitments, speaking commitments. I'm like, enough with the commitments already. I don't think you guys have this in Pennsylvania, but we have this thing called Bookers in New Jersey where everyone meets in a parking lot every quarter. And like all the groups, and they book speaking commitments for each other. And like they'll come back with like 200 something commitments. I'm like, Jesus Christ, you know, like give me a break, you know. And, but let me tell you, we run around and we do AA, and people hate us. You know, everyone calls us a cult and all this other stuff. I mean, like, they try to kick us out of the meeting book. I mean, you know, we're not very popular in our area. But I have the best time with them. And, like, I don't really care about what anybody else says about them because I know because it sits right in my heart. You know, when I'm doing the right thing, it really doesn't matter what anybody else says about what I'm doing because I know it works for me, you know. Not everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous needs to do the things that I need to do. I am very, very sick. Yeah, I am very, very sick. And for a long time, I didn't think I was that sick, you know, until I started smashing things, you know. And let me tell you, I need to do a lot of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. I need to do AA all day, every day, you know. And that doesn't mean just going out and helping alcoholics. I mean, that is my primary purpose. My goal in life today, but I mean, the things that I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous, I can bring into my other life. You know, I went back to school, and somehow I made the dean's list. I'm not that smart. You know, like I don't know how it happened, but for some reason, I showed up 10 minutes early to every class. You know, and I stayed, and I did my homework. And people told me to do my homework, and I wrote a paper. And people told me to write a paper. You know, and I'd never done that before. You know, and I can see that. That's because of sponsorship. You know, that's like from following directions. That's because my sponsor tells me you go and show up to an AA meeting early. You know, I wake up most days and I wonder who I am. You know, I did another inventory with my sponsor when I was down there, and I realized like how much of a taker. Like I thought I was so fabulous with my family and everything, and I realized how much of a taker I am with them. You know, I just keep asking them to give me stuff. I'm like, God, he's got more money than me. You know. Bring it this way. I'm like, they like buying me stuff, you know. And I realized, like, how much it I'll blow them off. They pay so much money. They pay for my tuition for school. And I, you know, and I'll blow them off. You know, not go over. They live a half an hour away from me and not go over and let them see their granddaughter. You know, how selfish is that? You know, I think, oh, I don't have the time, you know. I mean, and there's that, you know, one point is, like, I've got room to grow. I've got a lot of room to grow, you know. But AA, you know, my sponsor tells me I can have it all. You know, I can be a strong woman in Alcoholics Anonymous. I can be active in Alcoholics Anonymous. I can have success in my personal relationships. You know, I can have financial security. You know, and I want it all. You know, as long as I'm putting my recovery first, as long as I'm willing to lay down my life for another alcoholic, as long as I'm willing to drop everything because someone's calling me because they're dying, you know, and I'm willing to put off my plan, you know, everything in my life can work out. You know, and it's not just one thing or the other. It's, you know, I got to do the inventories. I got to keep up with my 10 steps. I got to keep up with my relationship with my higher power. You know, and I got to keep current with people. I got to tell them what's going on. You know, and I love being around people in my home group because they just laugh. You know, when I tell them things, they think it's the funniest thing in the world. You know, and I don't feel judged. You know, I know I can say anything. And I've never felt so free in my entire life. Never felt so free. You know, I love just being able to let my guard down and be comfortable in my own skin. I love it. And that's how I feel. When I have both feet jumped into AA, when I'm fully committed to Alcoholics Anonymous, my life is amazing. And when I don't, when I have one foot in, one foot out, my life sucks. You know? Mm-hmm. And I think it's AA's fault. Trust me, AA works. You know, it's probably you. if it's not working for you. You know? I don't know. I wake up some days and I just can't believe who I am. I wake up and I say, who am I? You know, I'm in a steady relationship with somebody and, you know, I wake up to the same person every single morning, you know, and that's amazing. That's a miracle for a gal like me. And I have a beautiful, I never wanted kids, I never wanted to be a mother, and I have a little baby girl, and she shines God out of her. I don't know how I got so lucky. She just smiles and laughs all day long. And let me tell you, a couple people from my home group, you know, babysat her today because that's just what they do. They help me, you know. And they have the best time with her. She's just like, she smiles, she laughs, she just shines God out of her. She's just spiritually fit 24/7. It was fabulous. And, you know, I'm in school, I have a job. Like, when I was drinking, I had a 0.6 GPA, you know? Like, I had no ability to show up and do anything. I was not one of them functioning alcoholics, you know? I could not get anything accomplished to save my life. And the things that I do today on a daily basis, it's only the result. It's not the result of not drinking. It's the result of not drinking and doing AA, you know? AA doesn't just sober me up, you know? AA makes me kind of this whole brand new life. And thank God, because my old life sucks, and I don't want it back. You know, and I'd like to thank you a lot for having me tonight, and I don't know if someone else comes up here, or else we just close the meeting. Do we have a nice day closing? Is that it?
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.